Addy, third hour, hour number three, coming live for the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Rocket Mortgage with you every step of the way. Help provide a seamless mortgage experience. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM 206, Monday, February 18th, 2019. And before you know it, start seeing some baseball popping up on the tube. You know, starters playing a couple of innings. You know, going a little deeper.
It's true. And no Bryce Harper, no Manny Machado.
Oh, it's crazy.
It is. It's nuts.
It really is.
Look, I know you and Jen and some of Jen's girlfriends are coming to the show on Thursday.
Yes.
Kinky Boots on Broadway. Mm-hmm. You know who was there on Saturday?
I know our makeup artist, Mark, was there
Margaret
on Friday.
Went on Friday.
On Saturday.
Anthony Lynn, head coach of the Los Angeles Chargers.
Did you see him?
Yeah.
Did you say hi?
He came backstage afterwards.
Oh, yeah?
And I didn't know this story. I found it, though. His wife is a news anchor on WNBC, Channel 4, here in New York.
Does she have a different name?
Stacey Bell is her last name.
I don't know that name, Stacey
Bell. They live this, like, bi-coastal life. So they're back and obviously back
keeps
and forth.
It fresh.
Back and forth.
See you in a week, honey.
Yeah, see ya. I got a job.
Let's be honest. Is that the worst thing? You think some guys would sign up for that?
Yes.
Not me, honey. I certainly would.
I want to sleep with my wife. But you know what I mean. It's just unique relationship that they have. It's coast to coast marriage for Chargers Lynn and Channel 4's Bell. It was in Newsday.
Okay.
But yeah, so she came back. He didn't know I was in it.
Uh-huh.
She did. He didn't. And he's like, oh, surprised. You know, but it was good to meet him. I told him that I was championing him for coach of the year all season long.
Uh-huh.
He is huge, man.
In terms of thickness?
Yeah, he looks like a tight end. He played running back in the National Football League.
Yeah.
But he looks like a tight end.
Did he have the white beard going still, or did he trim that thing up?
No, he's got the little white.
He's got the little white coming out?
White beard, full white beard.
Santa wants to know, did you get his phone number?
I have
for the show?
I'll get it from his wife.
So, Santa, that's a no.
That's a no. I mean, I'm not going to ask him for his phone number. Last time I met him.
He came backstage to see you. He's on your turf. Get his number.
I think Rondé probably has it.
Rondé's not on Broadway.
He told me to tell Rondé to say hello. I was like, all right. How do you know?
Did you grill them while they no-showed against the Pats?
No.
Of course, you didn't do that
but
either.
But some of my castmates were. So I felt bad for him.
I'll tell you, he did a really good, notwithstanding that kind of empty performance against the Pats. They just got rolled.
Yeah.
He's a good coach. He's doing a really good job with that team.
Agreed.
I like Anthony Lynn a lot. We've praised him a lot, so it's good.
Won some tough games last year. I agree. No, it was awesome.
So Jen wants me to. There's no way I'm doing this, by the way. So we're going on Thursday, as Tiki just said, and the Dallas crew. Some of my wife's best friends are coming in from Dallas. Actually, one of whom is already here, staying in the city. So my mom and dad are coming over to help out with the kids. Wednesday, is it Wednesday night? Jen's going to stay in the city, go out with the girls, do dinner, do the whole spa thing, blah blah blah. So Daddy's got a little more responsibility, which is cool. And then all the girls, they ordered, you know, of course they have to do this. I don't know why girls have, like, they have to always, like, role play everything. They all have red boots, all right? I told you, they all have red boots. So she's like, you have to wear those red sneakers that you have. I said, I'm not wearing red sneakers. Are you crazy? I said, you're lucky I'm going to support this guy. She's like, come on, we're going to take a great picture with red sneakers. I said, listen, you know, I can't wait to see him perform. I know it's going to be a great show. That's where it stops. I'm going to show up and I'm not getting suited up for Kinky Boots.
I stand with BT.
Yeah. They are pretty sweet sneakers, too. I've worn them like once or twice.
Yeah, I've seen them.
They get dirty, though. I got to keep them nice and fresh.
Yo!
What?
The kicks!
Oh, the kicks! The kicks!
What was that? What was that movie? That was Do the Right Thing, right? Was that Do the Right Thing? Yeah, I think it was. Yeah, where he stepped on his kicks.
Was
Mookie.
It?
No, that wasn't Mookie.
No.
It was,
No. You're thinking about New Jack?
No.
Do the Right Thing, New Jack. I know the genre.
It was
give me
Do
a
the
year.
Right Thing. He had a new pair of shoes. I think they were Jordans.
No, white man can't jump.
No. And then the guy walked on him, stepped on him. Guy wore glasses.
Juice? Tupac?
No,
when Tupac was in Juice?
It was Do the Right Thing. I'm positive.
Oh,
and then
okay.
He stops the guy. And he's like, yo!
I don't remember that scene.
Oh, come on.
I don't remember that scene.
I'll find it.
It's not exactly a cinematic, like, iconic moment. I mean,
Do the Right Thing.
I mean, it's a good movie, but I haven't really thought of it. It's actually a really good movie. But I haven't thought about that scene, nor have I thought about that movie in a while. I have thought a few times that I think, and I've said this on the show, that the Giants should seriously investigate trading Odell Beckham Jr., all right? I've said that. A lot of Giant fans resist it. My ultimate point is, you know, he's 27, I think, 27, year five or so?
And he stayed. Yeah, so he's 27.
Been around a little bit. Obviously a terrific player when he's right. He's won nothing. The one playoff game, now I'm not saying that's his fault, but the one playoff game that he actually played in, he dropped the third down pass on the first drive.
Mm-hmm.
And as much as I've been on Eli, who I think is overrated, Eli Manning was ready to do seemingly what Eli Manning tends to do in playoff moments. Eli Manning was ready to put up some numbers that day. And his receivers betrayed him. Shepard dropped the touchdown. Odell Beckham played poorly. They came out without their shirts. They looked like a bunch of dopes. And we have what we have with Odell Beckham Jr. Now, this report from our buddy Chris Sims. Do you see this story?
No.
All right, Chris Sims.
I mean, I heard the rumors about Odell getting traded.
Well, Chris took a little, you know, a little more specific than just the rumor route. Here's what Chris Sims said. He's explained earlier today. He said that and Chris member worked for the Pats for a little bit here, yeah. So he's obviously piped in up there. He said that New England's interest in Beckham ultimately caused the Giants to think twice. Basically, if the Pats saw something in Beckham that would have caused them to give up a significant trade compensation and cough up significant second contract, even though he had never played for the Pats previously, the Giants should be more inclined to keep him around. Mm. In essence, Chris positioned it as if because, you know, the Pats rarely make bad moves, yep. Although they've made a few that kind of go unnoticed. But since they're the Pats, if the Pats want Odell Beckham, then maybe the Giants should reevaluate how they view Odell Beckham Jr., basically saying if it was a different team, maybe that deal actually happens.
Maybe.
What do you think?
I think the Giants know what they have in Odell. I know that they know his quirks,
mm-hmm.
But they also know that, and this is the other side of this, BT, he's hurt a lot.
I know.
A lot.
Oh, I know.
But when he's healthy, I mean, he's unstoppable at times.
Yep.
And he's tantalizing. And also, he's a brand. But it's important. Not that it fits specifically with the Giants brand.
Mm-hmm.
So that's...
Or the Pats brand.
Yeah, but the Pats can... They handle these type of... You know what I mean? These type of players who are a little askew of walking the right, the straight and narrow, right? They handle them.
Yeah.
They've done it for
historically,
years.
Randy Moss... Gronk is a little quirky, but Gronk knows what it's time.
And Corey Dillon had issues.
Yeah, Corey Dillon, running back, sure.
Right?
Yeah.
They have a history of getting it right, getting these guys to fall in line, at least buy into the program, and not be an off-field distraction. The Giants want players like that. He doesn't fit it, in a sense, because he's so me, mm-hmm. right? And it's look at me, and it's not often his reasons aren't communicated well, you know what I mean, or his emotions aren't communicated well, and so it seems like it's a distraction, even though his teammates love him.
Mm-hmm.
So
and he's a hard worker, and works his behind off.
But at the end of the day,
that he can't dispute,
and that's the point that I think ultimately keeps him with the Giants. He's the hardest working dude there.
But that's also why I think he'd fit in seamlessly with the Pats.
Agreed. But if you're the Giants, you're not letting him go. If he was a half asser. Like, he was just naturally
mm-hmm.
super.
Well, then he wouldn't have given him that contract. Or we wouldn't be discussing this because they wouldn't have re-signed him.
The reason that he stays around,
yep.
no matter where he goes, but specifically with the Giants, is because he works his ass off. And he wants to be great.
Oh, I don't doubt that.
And that's infectious.
I think he aspires to greatness. I do. I've always thought that about Beckham. He is a committed athlete who is seemingly able, while he still has all of his, you know, physical prime. Like, he's, I don't know what happens when they deteriorate a little bit. I don't know. But he seems to be a pretty good balancer of his brand and remaining a committed athlete. Yeah. There doesn't seem to be any dip in how he craves football. Agreed.
Which is hard to do.
However, that doesn't mean I wouldn't trade him. I'd absolutely trade him. Now, I'm not going to give him away. There's no way I'm going to do that. But I mean, do we really need any more evidence that you don't need that kind of a wide receiver to win the Super Bowl?
No.
Or to even get there?
No, of course.
Especially when you have other holes everywhere else.
Yeah. I mean,
defense, offensive line, they don't need him.
See, I agree. It's an emotional thing for a lot of people, a lot of fans. Like, if Giants fans called the show and you were asked about Odell Beckham Jr., you'd be like, dude, I have the best wide receiver, or at least one of the top two wide receivers in football right now.
True, I believe there's a thawing that I believe more and more Giant fans, maybe more than you let on, are actually willing to embrace the possibility of trading him.
Maybe, but...
Because they haven't won with him. And Giant fans are winners.
Well, you know what also helps? You know, and it just is what it is. Mm. It's the luck of being bad. is that the Giants have a generational player in Saquon Barkley, who is – he is the Giant, fits the Giant MO.
Yes, he does.
Says the right things.
Uh-huh.
He also works his butt off. He's down to earth. He's chill.
Uh-huh.
And he's great.
Yes.
And so I think teams like the Giants need like a – he's my favorite player. You know what I mean? Like, who's your favorite player? Oh, it's Saquon. Oh, it's Odell.
Mm-hmm.
For a while, it's just Odell.
Yeah,
Odell
he didn't have much competition in that regard.
He was an icon,
yep.
Right? You know,
yep.
Just the way he acted, his behavior, his hair, his dancing, all that stuff. It's what kids would look up to. Now they have someone else.
All the stuff that means nothing at the end of the day.
Of
course. Do you score touchdowns? Are you healthy? Are you reliable?
Right.
And do you win?
And he wasn't from jump. Saquon is.
Exactly. So you're kind of answering the question the way I'm answering it. And I think the Giant fans are beginning to embrace the notion, or at least, you know,
I would agree with that.
Be willing to accept exploring a world without Odell Beckham Jr.
The Giants fans would not be up in arms if they traded him.
No.
Two years ago, maybe, or a
yes.
year ago. They'd be like, what are you doing? We have nothing else.
It's true.
Right?
That's true. And I can understand that mentality.
Me too.
I get that.
Me too.
You know?
It doesn't feel that way anymore. Especially because he was missed so many games this year. And Sterling Shepard played great.
Sterling Shepard is good. I don't know if he's going to be 1A on a team that's going to win 12 or 13 games.
But he played really well.
He'd be a great two. You know, if you had Sterling Shepard, I'm trying to think. You know what kind of reminded me of? Like,
I think about the Pats. Who's the Pats one? Is it Edelman?
It's Julian Edelman for sure.
Of course.
It's Edelman.
Sterling Shepard be that kind of player? I mean, he's got to get tougher probably.
He plays a different game.
Edelman takes a ton of hits.
Yeah, he plays a totally different style.
I was rewatching the AFC Championship game. Some of those catches and hits. I mean,
he's a Hall of Famer. I know not everybody buys that.
He's not making the Hall of Fame. He just got
drilled. Yeah, he is. He's going to make the Hall of Fame.
I promise you, he is not making the Hall of
Fame. I promise you, you're selling him short.
I'm not selling him short, BT. I'm just telling you, he's not making the Hall of
Fame. Based on what?
Because he's had 2,000-yard seasons. He's never made a Pro Bowl.
Mm-hmm.
He's never made All-Pro. Yes, he has great accomplishments in the postseason, but that's because he's playing for the New England Patriots, right? Wes Welker has better stats than he does. That is what it is.
Wes Welker make as many plays in the playoffs as Julian Edelman's
made? Wes Welker didn't have as many chances in the playoffs. There was a drought for a decade where Wes Welker was making All-Pros and everything else for the New England Patriots. The teams weren't as good.
Maybe if Wes Welker was better, he would have elevated the team Edelman. That's not fair.
You know
but
it's not, it's
I,
not
we, listen. That I'm kidding with that last point. That Wes Welker is a beast, there's no doubt. But you and I just totally disagree on this. I believe he's going to be a Hall of Famer. Or let me put it this way. I can't read the future. I don't know if he's going to actually
there
get in.
Too many
let me put it this way.
There are too many great players.
I hear you. I believe
he's
a Hall of Famer.
That are playing this position that are his peers that are guaranteed Hall of Famers. Guaranteed.
Talking about like the Julio Joneses,
Julio
guys
Jones,
like that.
AJ Green. Maybe AJ probably because he's been hurt a lot.
AJ Green's been banged up a lot. He's 31.
I would have put AJ there 4 years ago. Like
I would have that trajectory for sure.
No, he was on his path, but I have to really think about it.
And you got to really look at his numbers. He's had some big years, but
he's also missed some ton of time.
I'm not disputing that. Who else?
Antonio Brown is in this conversation.
Yep.
I'm trying to think of these off the top of my head now.
But I guess I'm
saying
like
Fitzgerald, etc.
Fitzgerald's a first ballot. I guess I'm saying, I'm not putting a time restraint on it. Like, I know that he's going to have a long wait. And nor do you. You don't know that he won't get in. I don't know that he will get in. When I say that, all I'm saying is I believe that he should. I view him as a guy who has impacted the game enough. I believe he's a Hall of Famer. But I also understand the opposite view. In totality, where's the 1,000-yard seasons? Where's the 100 catches? Where's the first-team All-Pro? Where's the 5 or 6 Pro Bowls? I get that. I hear that part of the eye. I understand where you're coming from. All right, coming up next, the Johnnies. Oh, the place was popping last night, Teague. It was so loud, I couldn't even hear myself speak during the game.
Yeah,
I was almost jealous that I couldn't sit in the stands and watch it because I don't get the full ambiance when I'm doing the game.
You have your headphones, your whatever. You can't hear it.
They were down 19 points to Villanova. They came back and they won in front of 20,000 people at the Garden. Chris Mullin. And we'll also ask about Zion Williamson because they play Duke. If he sees an NBA comparison, do a lot of college hoops about the Big East, but we'll branch out to some NBA stuff with Mully. Mully's going to join us next. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio.
This is Tiki and Tierney on CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 855-212-4227. Brought to you by GEICO. Great news. Quick way to save a little money. Switch to GEICO. Just go to geico.com and a 15-minute save 15% or more on car insurance. It's about 23 minutes past the hour. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, Sirius XM 206. I was racking my brains, and I can't recall the Garden sounding quite that loud. That special sound that if you've been to the Garden, you know, place was on fire. We're joined now by the head coach of St. John's Basketball Hall of Famer, my good buddy Chris Mullen. Johnny's 19-7. They've taken out the Villanova Wildcats, Jay Wright's team, defending national champs. Mully, that was special. I mean, that was different. What's happening, buddy? How are you today?
TKMBT, good afternoon, man. How you guys doing?
We are good, man.
Doing fantastic.
With all the success. What did it feel like for you? I know BT was championing this big time yesterday on social media and obviously today as well. What did it feel like for you? That's a big win for your program.
Yeah, it was a big step forward, TK. We've had, our last two games at the Garden kind of lackluster. The Georgetown game actually played really well, made some NBA threes against us. The Providence game, we played good defense. We didn't rebound the ball. So some things have been hurting us. It was really important for us to get that breakthrough game at the Garden with a packed house against a championship team. And we talked about that, just, you know, taking that next step. You know, we've been a little bit inconsistent in backing up wins. So we put together two good games now, and, you know, we enjoyed last night. Now our focus is on Providence now coming up.
Yeah, of course. I mean, this is year four, Coach, and you think about – you know, where you started, and BT has been optimistic, even though it's been the prospects have been dim. BT is always optimistic.
Bro, I got to get his back. Mully knows that, right, Chris? Come on, you know how we do it in Flatbush.
But to you, does it feel like all of this hard work and dedication that you've been putting in is finally starting to pay off? And when you get a big win like that at the Garden, it also helps on the other side of your job, which is recruiting.
Yeah, no doubt. Look, but really, this has been a natural progression. Everyone wants it to happen faster. Mm-hmm. This is exactly the way it's supposed to happen. It's not supposed to be easy. It's not supposed to happen overnight. And you're supposed to go through growing pains. So in my mind, we're right on schedule. Progression, not perfection. And that's what we've shown. And the resiliency when things don't go right, don't blame, don't point fingers, go back to work. So from that standpoint, I think we're right on target, right where we need to be. I thought yesterday was a big step forward for us, you know, playing in front of a packed house against a championship team. So that's good, but we have to back it up again. So, the progression continues. The focus stays the same. The preparation stays the same. And I think we'll keep on getting better. Like you said, it does help recruiting. The one thing that has really been impressive, and BT been a bunch of games, our crowds have been growing.
Yeah.
And I think they feel that this is a legitimate team. Again, they've been through this process with us. I think there's something about that. When you take steps together, you know, you deal with losses and wins together. I think there's a organic, genuine feel about it. And there's no place better to take a big step forward than a packed house at MSG.
There's no building like it. There's no doubt about that. Chris Mullen, head coach of St. John's Basketball Hall of Famer, year number four, Johnny's. Knocking on the door, 20 wins, obviously getting ready for Providence. Always a tough battle up there at the Dunkin' Donuts Center. That's coming up on Wednesday. You know, Chris, I don't know if you look at it this way, but we've seen so many games where Shamari Ponds, whether it's 40 or 35 or 29, whatever he drops, I mean, he's basically had an All-American kind of season and an All-American kind of career. But I almost think that it's a good thing that you guys won and he played poorly by his standards. Like, He didn't carry you to the finish line like he's done so many times. Other guys were forced to gain ownership of this game. Most notably, Figueroa, who's got a great motor and is really tough. But can you speak to winning a big game without Shamari Ponds having a vintage game? I think that's big for the program.
It is, and I think, BT, what it shows, too, is Shamari, you know, he's got a gift for scoring, no doubt about it. He's got incredible instincts. But to me, the biggest part of his game is his playmaking, his passing, and his vision. So the reason LJ and Mustafa were able to get those, you know, catch and shoots and plays out in the open floor is because there's a lot of attention being paid to Shamari. And I thought yesterday he did a good job of, bringing that attention to him and getting rid of the ball and trusting his teammates that something good would happen. Now, it didn't happen right away. We were getting good looks in the first half. We weren't knocking them down. Over time, we got our players are good enough. If we have open shots, we're going to make them. And I think that trust is really important And then Shamar, like I said, his playmaking is as important as his scoring, and having Mustafa, LJ, Justin, and Marvin as guys that can really take over games as well. And a lot of times they're playing on, you know, 4-on-3, 3-on-2 situations because they're doubling Shamari.
Yeah.
We feel totally comfortable with that.
There's no doubt. You mentioned Mustafa Herod, obviously, is a national show. People might understand or recognize that name from his days at Auburn. Big-time transfer, second-team All-SEC. He's fit in very nicely. You know, Chris, you know, I've known you for a while, and you never get too high, never get too low. You don't spike one way or the other. You're pretty even keel. That every time I seem to see you, whether we're shooting something on campus for TV or just catching up in a locker room or I see you before a game, you're always the same guy. But I have to think that when you guys are down 19, even if you didn't visibly show it to your team, you had to be stewing a bit. You had to be ticked off the way the first 16, 17 minutes of that game went. You had 20,000 people there. It was a show-me kind of a game. You must have been stewing inside a little bit, no?
Yeah, well, actually, I'm trying to figure out what to do to help these guys get back in the game. That's really where my focus is. Whether I'm upset or not really doesn't matter. But as I was watching that first half, I didn't see anything that we couldn't change. You know, I thought we were getting good looks. I thought that to start the game, you know, we gave up a three right away. That was something we talked about not doing to Gillespie. Keep running them off the line. As you see, as the game wore on, you know, final stats, he was 1-for-8. Pascal was 2-for-11, and Booth was 2-for-11. So we accomplished our goal. It just took a little bit of a while to work into the game. But I thought our guys did a good job mentally staying in it. And there's no doubt the close of the half was a big momentum build for us. We were down 18 in one of the timeouts, and we just talked about cutting this lead down to 14 or 12. And I thought that shot, although a lot of guys wouldn't take it, that Justin Simon took, it went from 14 to 11. Now you have a manageable number, and lo and behold, our defense remained solid, and then we started making some open shots.
Yeah, you know, I want to ask you about Zion Williamson, because I know you guys played him Super Bowl weekend a couple weeks ago, but real quickly, back to Shamar Ponds. Do you see him as a pro, and what kind of pro will he be?
Yeah, Shamar, I watch enough NBA games. He's better than a lot of guys that are playing in the league now, and the one thing I always talked to him about from the first day he stepped on campus was being sharp and quick and playing with pace all the time, because I've been around enough NBA teams. When you have the smaller type guards, whether it be 6 feet, 6'2", 6'1", or under, they're the most energetic, and they set the pace, whether it be shoot around, practice, and in the game, they play with the most energy. And that's been something I've been stressing to Shamar. He's done a much better job this year with his pace and playing sharp, and he'll continue to do that.
Okay. Well, hopefully he doesn't have to play against this guy you played a couple weeks ago in Zion Williamson, because he's a man. And we look, my Cavaliers, they beat everybody except for Duke, except because of Zion Williamson, and I guess R.J. Barrett as well. But you talk about, you know, the evolution of the basketball athlete, because he jumps out of the gym, and he's 280. And what was it like playing against that guy?
Yeah, you know what? Tiki, the athleticism of these guys, I don't know why it keeps changing, but it keeps getting better, bigger, stronger, quicker, more power. I don't know how it happens, but I remember back in the day, you know, to me, one of the longest crazy athletes to play against was Scottie Pippen.
Yep.
Right? He was tough. He was long. He could defend. You get by him, you think you're open. He'd somehow get back to recover and block your shot. But now you look at Antetokounmpo, he's way longer and bigger, more athletic than Scottie.
Yeah.
You know, So Zion, to me, look, his size, his athleticism, his power is visible. You can see it, obviously. But to me, his speed is really, really incredible from end to end. I mean, he'll get from half court to the rim in one dribble and just 2-3 strides. And I've mentioned this before, BT and Tiki, is the one thing that really sticks out to me is the joy that he plays with.
Interesting.
You know, and a guy like him who's been critiqued and rated since he was probably 11 years old, sometimes that wears on you. I love the way he gets along with his teammates in game, pressure games. He's out there laughing, having fun. And to me, that's something that's really important for young kids to maintain, because, you know, at such a young age with social media and being rated after each performance, they're going up and down in the ratings, and their draft stock is going up and down. To be able to maintain that love of the game, I think, is really, really important. And in some ways, it becomes a talent in itself, just to maintain that passion and love of the game.
That's good perspective. That's Chris Mullin, head coach of St. John's. Johnny's I know Chris isn't going to say this, but they just punched a ticket last night. They'll, you know, handle business the last five games of the conference tournament. St. John's is in good shape here. I said that, Chris, the best comparison I could come up with is a lefty Larry Johnson before Larry lost his hops when he hurt his back. Do you have a better one for Zion?
If I could use two guys, I would morph Charles Barkley and Sean Kemp and put them together.
Jeez. Wow. Jeez.
You know, that's power.
He's got those
speed,
long arms.
You know, size.
Oh, my God.
He's incredible, man. He's going to be when he gets to the NBA and he plays with that extra space that they have in the wide key,
yeah,
he's going to be a monster.
Yeah, speaking of Sean Kemp, they were rolling some highlights back over the weekend about the dunk contest. I saw Chris Mullin making a business decision back in the day. Sean Kemp, the Rain Man, was coming down to flush one. Chris didn't even try. See, you made a U-turn. You ran out of the paint very smartly, I might add, Coach. Well, you just got out.
I was guarding the corner three, so I wasn't supposed to help out of there, you know?
And yeah.
Back in the day, you know, you didn't take charges in the NBA. You either blocked it or you got out of the way. So I did, like you said, I made a business decision.
Yep. Hey, by the way, I've always wondered, I don't even know if I've asked you this off the record. Like, I wonder, Chris, if you think today, right? Because we all know you couldn't run, you couldn't jump, but you were an amazing passer. You had a sweet shot, as good as anybody. Your IQ is through the roof here. And you played when the game was physical. I mean, literally fist fights with Georgetown, fist fights in the NBA. Do you think you'd be better today? The athlete's better today, but the spacing is different. Who would Chris Mullin or what would Chris Mullin be today in the NBA?
Well, I always think, you know, the way I learned the game without the three-point line helped a lot of other aspects of my game, moving without the ball, being able to shoot different types of shots inside the key and drawing fouls. So I thought that all came from playing without the three-point line. Now, I always tell our own players, it's always important the three-ball is one of the most important parts of the game now, and it's changed the game dramatically. But to be able to incorporate all different parts of the game is really important. I don't think I'd have the same feel I had for the game, but later in my career, you know, in the NBA now, it's almost a new job, like in baseball where you have, when we grew up, BT was a starter and a closer, right?
Yep, that's it.
Then you have a starter, a middle reliever, a one-inning guy, then a closer. So back in the day, you know, if you were a shooter, that wasn't good enough. You had to be able to play and shoot. Now there's almost a job where all you really have to do is shoot. But that's where the game has changed. The three-point shot has dominated the game now analytically. Obviously, it makes sense. But I still do think it's really how you create those shots is most important.
Awesome. All right, Mully, listen, I know you're juggling and you guys obviously playing late. You know, by the time you get back to campus, I'm sure – a little bit late last night, getting ready to go to Providence midweek. I appreciate some time, buddy. Huge win yesterday. Great job. And I know I'll see you. Well, I won't be at the Providence game. I'll see you again at Seton Hall next weekend at the Garden.
Always my pleasure, Tiki BT.
Be good, brother.
Thanks, brother. Right. Chris Mullin, St. John's head coach. Big win. They're safely inside the top 50 for the net rankings. They're third in the conference. 19 wins. St. John's is good to go. Obviously, you got to finish the job here. But, you know, I think the challenge will break you. But the challenge, I tell this to St. John's fans, you know, the challenge isn't, Don't just sneak into the tournament.
Yeah.
You know, don't be an 8-9 seed.
Yeah.
And then if you win, your reward is you get to play the top seed like Virginia or Duke or Kentucky or whatever region you're in. You know, keep scooting up. Win the Big East tournament. I mean, St. John's has played Marquette twice, who's a top 15 team, and they beat them twice. They should have beat Villanova. They lost 76-71 January 8th down there. They were up by 15 points the whole game. Basically the exact opposite of what happened last night.
Yeah.
The exact opposite script. St. John's should be 4-0 against Villanova and Marquette. And if they didn't get hosed against Seton Hall with that pathetic call on the Figueroa, we talked about that, that awful call and their reviewers. I mean, St. John's really could be running the show here in the Big East. So for the first time, for the first time since I've ever done their games, they actually, and that goes back to Mike Jarvis's last season, actually have a chance to win this conference.
That was a long time ago.
So 2003 was my first year doing it. Let's get the update from Mac. We'll come back. We've got the blast. Get a little something on Antonio Brown. Cap as well. Axe update coming at you right now.
This is Tiki and Tierney on CBS Sports Radio.
Okay, we've got the blast coming up here. Still a couple of dots to connect. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. It's time to answer our Ask the Pros question of the day. It's brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Today's question, let's go with this one. Tony Herlin at Masonry. That's, I believe I said that right. These Twitter handles are impossible to read. I say that all the time. They just they just make no sense, some of them. But Tony Herland did tweet, "All right, guys, what does the NBA have to do to get the superstars back in the slam dunk contest?"
I don't know if you can. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anything they can do. It's a young man's game, and the superstars are so far into their careers that they don't want to do it. They don't need to do it anymore. It used to be because of the need for, I don't know, showcasing yourself.
Oh, the money. You win, you get some money.
Yeah,
that's what they were doing. But, they wanted some money.
Yes, and that.
Endorsements.
But
and
now
all
these guys make so much money.
Oh, that's what I'm saying.
It doesn't matter anymore.
No, sadly, it really doesn't. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts, all your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts, better prices every day. I don't know who said it during the game because everybody was talking at once. You know, you had Charles, you had Jack, everybody was messing around. Somebody said that they wouldn't mind seeing, like, the slam dunk contest almost work on a revolving basis where it goes away for a couple of the years. Like, maybe, I think they suggested every fourth year, which is too much, but maybe every other year. Because if you build up a little hype and then it's not there, it might prove as a little incentive, but I think you hit it. I mean, the money is such a big... back in the now you just go to a party in Charlotte, right? You get $50,000 for showing up to the party.
That's true.
Why are you going to waste your time getting, dunking?
You know, it's the same.
You don't need to look bad. That's the other thing, Teak.
Yeah.
You could also look bad.
That's right.
And they don't want to risk looking bad. Their brands are at stake here.
Agreed.
If they miss a dunk, if they back rim it, God forbid if they slip and fall or something.
And these guys take themselves so seriously
they do.
Now. And so it's different.
Yeah. And we all have LeBron to blame. I mean, LeBron, the drama queen, was the one who stopped this because, again, the economics of it were very different when you and I were kids. But, Michael Jordan did it, and Dominique Wilkins did it, and they just did it. And I guarantee if Larry Bird could dunk, Larry Bird would have done it.
He
did the three-point shootout. If Magic was a great dunker, Magic would have done it. I think if Isaiah was a great dunker, Isaiah would have done it. There's just a reluctance to... put themselves out there, and sadly, we're not going to go back. It is what it is.
It's hard to blame them either. It's hard to blame them. I wouldn't do it either.
Why?
If I didn't need the press or the money, why do it?
Well, maybe for the spirit of the game. I mean, to grow the game.
But do you need to grow the game? It's doing well by its already.
Yeah, that's
right?
True. Selfishly, the answer would be no.
Yeah.
But if you step out of your little bubble as a pro athlete, say, hey, what about the little kids out there that buy you jerseys? I'm sure they want to watch it.
Yeah.
I know that's an overly optimistic way of viewing things. Probably not even practical anymore. Mm-hmm. Although there's a lot of good athletes out there. I'm not implying that. But I guess the bottom. It's not that dissimilar from the home run derby.
You're right.
You get a couple of days off. Can you really? I guess I could go both ways. Can you fully blame them for wanting to kind of chill and ham it up and just, laugh and have a good time and watch the other young kids do it? But next year, Zion Williamson better be in it. Zion's got to be in it. And then Zion, you get to year 4 and 5. You don't have to keep doing it.
You're right.
You got to do it next year, though. You ready for the blast, Teak?
Yes.
Let's go.
So many topics, so little time. We give you 5 stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for The Blast with Teaky and Tierney.
Okay, here we go. The Broncos, John Elway, reportedly love Drew Locke. Mm-hmm. Memo to everybody else, that means Drew Locke's not going to be good based on John Elway's quarterback assessments lately. What? Could you see them drafting him in the first round despite trading for Joe Flacco?
Yes, I absolutely can. We said this last week, BT, when this Joe Flacco trade went down. Obviously, Case Keenum's tenure in Denver is short. But Joe Flacco's a short-term Band-Aid.
Yes.
You only need him for 1 year, and then you can cut him. It's not punitive at all on their cap if they do so. So, absolutely.
Totally agree. This bridges the gap between being irrelevant and maybe squeezing out 9-ish wins, being in that vicinity for wild card. You never know. It's the ultimate sport of attrition. God forbid one premier quarterback goes down. Things change in the division. Things change in the AFC conference. So, whether it's Drew Locke or somebody else, I could totally see them having that kind of a plan. Matter of fact, I actually think they should. All right, Rockets GM Daryl Morey hints he'd be interested in signing Ray Allen. All right, we know Ray's 43, hasn't played since 2014. Could you see him helping the Rockets? The answer is no. Stop. Yeah. Let's not waste time on this.
No chance.
Ray Allen's a great player. Ray Allen's actually even a pretty good actor,
Yeah.
But Ray Allen's 43. I know he keeps himself in great shape, but Ray Allen would get absolutely abused on defense. The answer is no. Stop. No. Stop.
I don't even need to co-sign.
Stop.
I don't even need to tell you I co-sign. You know I do.
Next. The Knicks once again. This is creeping up a lot.
Mm-hmm.
You can only pray that it actually comes to fruition. The report out there that James Dolan is taking offers for the team. What, $4 billion roughly? And he might sell it. Why do we always hear these rumors, and do we believe that he is ready to sell?
Well, I think you're hearing them because the Knicks are likely putting them out there to entice people to offer. Oh, you got a deal? Well, how about this deal? And they're going to keep doing that until they get an offer that sounds right, and then he'll take it.
Uh-huh.
I think he's tired of it. He's tired of the negativity.
Yeah.
It's a big asset to have on your hands, especially if the success on court isn't playing out the way that you've wanted.
Well, not to mention the Rangers too.
Decades,
not to mention the Rangers as well. Right. They sold off the Liberty. They divested himself there. I also think that he wants to keep control of the other aspects of the Garden entity, concerts, the Forum. Remember, they purchased the Forum out in L.A.
Yep.
Great Western Forum, where the Lakers used to play. So it doesn't mean that James, you wouldn't actually get the building of the Garden.
No.
But could you buy the Knicks? It seems like the time is. Like, it seems like he might be ready to sell off.
Yeah. Get rid of the basketball problem.
Dear basketball gods, let this be true. Sell it. Fast. R.J. Barrett gets his fourth triple, or gets the fourth triple-double in Duke history. Why are triple-doubles so rare in college? Number one, the game's shorter.
Mm-hmm.
You go from 48 minutes to 40 minutes. That's first and foremost. I also think that for whatever reason, there's not really high rebounding totals in college.
True.
Fewer possessions.
It's also, this is what the first thing that popped in my head was, that's because you're not playing with superstars all over the place.
Okay.
So even if you're R.J. Barrett and you're driving, you'd have no chance that guy's going to make it.
Oh, you mean guys don't finish. So the assists might maybe more elusive.
They're not great shooters.
Big part of it.
You
not a skilled shooters. That's actually. And listen, if I'm dribbling, I'm 33 feet away from the rim, and I throw a chest pass to the corner, and Steph Curry hits a three, that's an assist.
Exactly.
I mean, so.
Exactly.
There's probably a few different reasons, and I think we tapped into a few. All right. That's crazy, though. Only four triple doubles in Duke. Grant. I would have thought Grant. Did Grant have one? Who had the other three, Mike? Do you know? Putting you on the spot. He's going to find that. He'll tell us before we get out of here. All right,
ask the question and not have the other three?
Three-time, that's true. Three-time, maybe we should have had it, though, because we actually asked to answer the question. He just has to ask it.
Yes.
Three-time World Series champ Bruce Bochy announced today that he will retire. 2019 is last. Bochy, 18 games under .500 for his career, despite three titles.
Mm-hmm.
Is he a Hall of Famer?
I think.
The answer, go ahead.
We talked about this earlier.
It's my turn.
I
love you.
It's all right. No, it's my turn. Is it? 1-3-5.
That was my turn.
Yeah. So, anyways, I'm saying yes. I'm just co-signing what you said earlier, BT.
Yeah.
Because managers, by and large, are judged by ultimate success.
Yes.
He's had a lot of ultimate successes. Getting to a World Series with the Padres and winning three with the San Francisco Giants, including the first one, right?
Yeah, in San Francisco.
And San Francisco.
Correct.
So, yeah, I'm saying.
Yes, I did touch on this a little bit earlier. Now, unfortunately for Boach, he doesn't have much of a chance to get number four this year because the Giants should be pretty bad. Tony La Russa's got three World Series. You have Sparky Anderson has three as well, the Big Red Machine, the Tigers in 1984 with those guys. Morrison out in travel, Chet Lemon, et cetera. Lou Whitaker, Sweet Lou. Casey Stengel's got seven. Joe McCarthy's got seven. I would have liked a few wild card appearances along the way to absolutely stamp this as a no-doubter.
Yeah.
Like, you manage 24 years, you make the playoffs four times, you win three World Series. I wish there was just a few more intermittent successes sprinkled in. But, yeah, Bochy's a Hall of Famer. Three championships speaks for itself. He's a Hall of Famer.
Time's up. The blast
is
over for another game.
All right, Samter, who else?
All right, so Sheldon Williams was the last one in 2006.
The landlord. That's
big guy.
He was a terrible NBA player.
But then before that,
he went drafted fifth overall.
Before that, Gene Banks in 1978 and Art Heyman in 63.
Art Heyman. Wow. Art Heyman, I actually should have known. Gene Banks, I did not. Art Heyman. I should have known that. Well, that was way before the three-point strike. They implemented that in 87. T, good start to the week, brother.
Yeah, man, of course.
And no traffic tonight. President's Day.
It's like crickets around here.
We'll see you tomorrow. Hey, you guys going to beat the Hokies tonight?
We better.
All right. We'll see you tomorrow.
We struggle with that one, though.
All right.